From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Iraq has been declared free of ISIS, a victory that comes at a huge cost. Many there are also declaring their independence from the United States, which has occupied the country since 2003. One volunteer unit has lost thousands of men in battles with ISIS. That group and others like it don't always see eye to eye with the government, but are willing to work together to defeat common threats. RT's Murad Gazdiev filed this report from Baghdad, Iraq.
The Valley of Peace, the largest cemetery in the world. Millions are buried here, and recent years have seen an upsurge in new arrivals. ISIS was the cause. Thousands upon thousands of Iraqi fighters have come here in coffins wrapped in the Iraqi flag. Most of these were volunteers.
This boy was 16 years old. Although he was forbidden to, he still joined the resistance. These are all officers. They weren't afraid of dying, and their parents took the sacrifice with pride. They are all heroes. We are proud of every single one of them. And this was the Sheikh of all snipers. He killed 343 ISIS fighters.
Abu Tahsin was among those who volunteered for the Hashd al-Shaabi, or popular mobilization forces, when the call went out 3 years ago. They proved key to defeating ISIS in Iraq. Hundreds of thousands of men on a jihad against jihadists. These paramilitaries largely answer to religious leaders, in this case, the Shia cleric al-Sistani. But they quickly earned a fearsome reputation. They participated in every major battle against ISIS and lost thousands along the way. There were reports of atrocities carried out by PMFs, allegations of human rights abuses and religious persecution. Yet few can say that ISIS could have been beaten without the PMFs. Besides an honor roll, this battalion even has its own ISIS museum to show for itself.
There are now more ISIS flags and weapons in museums and in private collections than there are out in the wild. Over here are a bunch of swords with a particularly horrible history. These are the weapons that ISIS used to execute people, to chop off people's heads and arms for various offenses. Over in the next exhibit, you have ISIS's bomb-making components. Here are a bunch of cell phones as well as detonators, radios. Over here is a suicide belt, grenades, mines, and other bits and pieces. Over in the next section is ISIS's air force, drones, DJI, phantoms, and gliders.
Thing is, the stand-up fight is almost done. It would be wrong to claim that ISIS in Iraq has been destroyed entirely, but the jihadists have certainly gone underground. The pitched battles are finished. Why, people ask, do we still need these huge and well-armed sectarian militias?
The PMFs played a huge part and they sacrificed a lot. But to be honest with you, they should hand in their weapons. This is the law of the country. We should pay them and thank them. And they, in turn, should disarm.
We follow the order of the cleric al-Sistani. He has told us not to hand over our weapons. Instead, he said, keep your eyes and your ears open for ISIS.
But it is more than that. Iraq is a divided country. The PMFs serve as more than fighters. They're seen as protectors of their communities, powerful armies that look after their own, be they Shias, Sunnis, Turkmen, or Yazidis. There are still potential enemies, be they neighboring communities, countries, or even current allies, the US-led coalition.
We know the Americans very well. They always have a stake everywhere, with both the Iraqi government and ISIS. Look at what the Americans did to the Kurds. They encouraged their referendum, but at the last moment withdrew their support. We don't take orders from the Americans.
And on that, at least, the Hashd al-Shaabi agree with the government.
We hope that with ISIS' demise, the coalition forces will leave. It's that simple.
The question remains open. What to do with hundreds of thousands of armed, religious, paramilitary fighters who threw away their lives to save their country from ISIS? Murad Yazdiev, RT, from Baghdad, Iraq.
Meanwhile, in Astana, the capital of Kazakhstan, the second day of Syrian peace talks closed with a press conference. This was Kazakhstan's foreign minister, Khairat Abdrakhmanov, speaking in his country's capital Friday.
Dear ladies and gentlemen, distinguished participants, the current round of negotiations within the framework of the Astana process has been held at an important turning point for Syria. Today, Syria is going through a number of significant developments that offer us new opportunities to pave the way towards peaceful and lasting political settlement of this crisis. Almost a year ago, cessation of hostilities agreement came into effect in December 2016, brokered by Russian Federation and Republic of Turkey. The event which launched the Astana process on Syria, strongly supported by my president, Nursultan Nazarbayev of Kazakhstan. With its essentially unique format, comprehensive nature, in a suitable platform for all parties concerned aimed at consolidating stability in Syria. This round of talks is convened at the end of this year, which offers a timely opportunity to take stock of the progress made and to identify the tasks that remain ahead. First of all, I highlight the fact that the cessation of hostilities in Syria has mostly held for 12 months for now, which in itself is a remarkable achievement as a result of ongoing regular consultations on the Astana platform among the parties and close cooperation by guarantors Iran, Russia, Turkey. The decision to establish the de-escalation zones deserves to be singled out as one of the most important and significant steps forward towards creating a favorable conditions for resuming full-fledged discussions on political agenda under the aegis of the United Nations in Geneva. The process of de-escalation launched in Astana was implemented by the guarantors in certain areas of Syria where hostilities are mainly stopped. Efforts for de-escalation were then also supported by the United States of America and the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan, the observer countries of the Astana process, which carried out this mission in cooperation with Russia in southwestern part of Syria. In spite of the fact that the present humanitarian situation in Syria is far from being fully satisfactory, there has been a gradual improvement thanks to the de-escalation of the conflict. But a lot of things remain unresolved, including the problem of exchanging detainees, which, in our view, represents one of the major obstacles for building confidence between the Syrians. In this regard, we urge guarantors and the Syrian parties to overcome their differences through a dialogue and achieve the final agreement in this humanitarian issue. All involved parties had managed to concentrate their efforts on combating Daesh. Today, this terrorist threat in Syria is suppressed. And finally, as we have witnessed during the last weeks and months, the Astana process has given further impetus to discussions on political settlement of the Syrian crisis, and now with the concrete proposals that it was in recent round of Geneva talks. All these issues, including the post-conflict reconstruction, were also negotiated among the world leaders at the highest level, and Kazakhstan hopes that every single initiative, including the Astana process, will help to move the Geneva peace talks forward in line with the UN Security Council's Resolution 2254. We believe that at the critical time it is of paramount importance not to jeopardize further possible progress. The urgency and the need for maintaining and strengthening the ceasefire had become more relevant in light of the promising prospects for political settlement in Syria. It is in that spirit that participants of the Astana meeting during the last 2 days had held very productive negotiations on a number of vital issues. In this regard, allow me to read out the text of the joint statement on the results of the international high-level meeting in Astana adopted by guarantors. The following is the text of joint statement by Iran, Russia, and Turkey on the international meeting on Syria in Astana. The Islamic Republic of Iran, the Russian Federation, and the Republic of Turkey as guarantors of the observance of the ceasefire regime in the Syrian Arab Republic, reaffirming their strong and continued commitment to the sovereignty, independence, unity, and territorial integrity of the Syrian Arab Republic, welcoming progress in the implementation of the Memorandum on the Creation of the De-escalation Areas in the Syrian Arab Republic, dated of 4th of May 2017. Welcome the achievements made in the fight against terrorism in Syria, particularly the defeat of ISIL and imminent liberation of all the Syrian territory from ISIL. Reaffirm their determination to continue cooperation in order to ultimately eliminate Daesh, ISIL, Nusra Front, and other terrorist entities as designated by the UN Security Council and to prevent the relocation of international terrorists to other countries and regions. Express joint determination to continue coordinated efforts to ensure that the progress in the reduction of violence is irreversible. They underscore the necessity to take urgent and active international steps in order to assist the Syrians in restoring unity of the country and achieving a political solution of the crisis in accordance with the provisions of UN Security Council Resolution 2254 through an inclusive, free, fair, and transparent Syrian-led and Syrian-owned process leading to a constitution enjoying the support of the Syrian people and free and fair elections with the participation of all eligible Syrians under appropriate UN supervision. Reaffirm their determination to closely interact on a regular basis to support preparation for and convening of the Syrian National Dialogue Congress in Sochi on 29th and 30th of January 2018, with the participation of all segments of the Syrian society, and call on the representatives of the government of the Syrian Arab Republic and the opposition that are committed to the sovereignty, independence, unity, territorial integrity, and non-fractional character of Syria to actively cooperate. To this end, three guarantors will hold a special preparation meeting in Sochi before the Congress on 19th and 20th January 2018. Emphasize that they view the upcoming Syrian National Dialogue Congress as an initiative aimed at giving momentum to negotiation process under the United Nations auspices in Geneva and facilitating an intra-Syrian agreement based on mutual consent. Adopt, with a view to build confidence between the conflicting parties in Syria, the regulation on the working group on the release of detainees, abductees, and handover of the bodies, as well as the identification of missing persons. And the joint statement on humanitarian mine action in Syria, including the UNESCO list of cultural heritage sites. Reaffirm their determination to continue implementing the provisions of the Memorandum of the 4th of May 2017 and other decisions adopted earlier within the framework of the Astana process. Emphasize the need to continue efforts aimed at strengthening the ceasefire regime and ensuring the effective functioning of all four de-escalation areas. Express their sincere gratitude to the President of the Republic of Kazakhstan, His Excellency Nursultan Nazarbayev, and the Kazakh authorities for hosting in Astana the 8th high-level international meeting on Syria. And last but not least, decide to hold the next high-level international meeting on Syria in Astana in the second half of February 2018. Ladies and gentlemen, this was the text of the joint statement. I would like to mention that all participants made a great contribution to end this year of negotiations in the framework of the Astana process with remarkable results in maintaining the stability in Syria. As you know, last year, on December 31st, the United Nations Security Council unanimously adopted Resolution 2336, where the talks in Astana were viewed as an important part of the Syrian-led political process and an important step ahead of resumption of Geneva talks. The members of the Security Council, having voted for that resolution, had expressed hope for 2017 to be a better year for Syrian people. And today, I believe those who placed their trust for Astana talks were not disappointed, witnessing the obvious results achieved on the ground in Syria. The President of Kazakhstan, while agreeing to provide a platform for talks on Syria in January this year, declared that diplomacy is the only viable path to peace in Syria. Therefore, the main conviction of Kazakhstan and that of participants of Astana process from the very beginning of these talks remain clear and unchanged. The unacceptability of military solution to this conflict and peaceful resolution of all differences through negotiations. We look with great optimism to the coming year to be successful to all of us, and it is our sincere hope that this spirit of cooperation, the Astana spirit, will also characterize your efforts in bringing peace to Syria in 2018. Let me to conclude my statement by reiterating Kazakhstan's readiness to further extend to you all possible support. I thank distinguished participants, esteemed delegations of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Russian Federation, Republic of Turkey, the Syrian government, the Syrian opposition, the United Nations, the United States of America, and the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan for their participation and constructive attitude. And I also thank the media for their very hard work and dedication. And last but not least, many thanks to our interpreters, and I wish you, taking this splendid opportunity, very happy season and very happy new year 2018. Thank you very much.
Kazakhstan's foreign minister was followed at the press conference by Syria's permanent representative to the United Nations, Bashar al-Jafari.
Shukran.
Thank you.
Ajrayna ijtima'at.
We held a number of constructive meetings at this eighth round of the Astana process. We also discussed issues relating to de-escalation zones, particularly in Idlib. The Syrian government sees the presence of Turkish troops in Syria as an act of aggression. It's at odds with what we achieved during the fourth round of the Astana process in May 2017. As for the roles that guarantor countries play in de-escalation zones, the U.S. statement that they want to leave their troops in Syria without the permission of the Syrian government is an act of aggression against the Syrian sovereignty and violates the U.N. Charter and the resolution relating to that. So, all these provisions set forth the rules of respecting Syrian sovereignty, and as Kazakh minister said, we demand that foreign troops leave our country immediately without any preconditions. On the other hand, Syria will be present at the National Dialogue Congress held in Sochi, and we will do everything in our power to prepare for this event that would be a good foundation for dialogue between Syrian people.
Text in English.
We held several constructive meetings in Astana 8. The discussions focused, among other issues, on the de-escalation areas, particularly in the governorate of Idlib. We consider the presence of the Turkish troops on the Syrian territory as a blatant aggression, and it contradicts with what was agreed upon in Astana 4 meeting, which was held, as you know, in the month of May 2017, on the role of the guarantors in the de-escalation areas. The United States' insistence to maintain its occupational troops in the territory of the Syrian Arab Republic without the consent of the Syrian government is also a blatant aggression against the sovereignty of the Syrian Arab Republic, and it contradicts both the provisions of the Charter of the United Nations and the UN relevant resolutions, which all affirm the respect for the sovereignty, independence, and territorial integrity of the Syrian Arab Republic. We demand, therefore, for the immediate and unconditional withdrawal of these foreign troops from our territory. Syria will attend the Syrian National Dialogue Conference to be held in Sochi. The Syrian government exerts all efforts to well prepare the ground for this conference, which will serve as a basis for the dialogue among the Syrians. I thank you. تفضلوا الآن أسئلة وأجوبة.
Можно микрофон, пожалуйста? Там работает.
Can I have a mic, please?
خلال هذه الجولة كان هناك حديث عن المواضيع الإنسانية.
Mr. Bashar, at this round you were discussing some humanitarian issues. And also you discussed the issue of possibly lifting the sanctions. I mean the sanctions by the UN of the Western countries. I would like to clarify that from the point of view of terminology. I would like to say that these are not sanctions, these are emergency economic measures, because they were not applied through the UN. These are emergency measures that were required by the emergency situation, so we cannot call them sanctions as such. And if we refer to the guidelines to the UN, to the Security Council, they did not issue sanctions. So, if you're talking about economic measures that were applied one-sidedly by any parties, they are not legitimate as such because there have not been any sanctions. We have discussed it with Iran and with Russia, and they understand fully the danger and the harm of such measures applied to the Syrian economy and to the Syrian people. Thank you. Your Excellency, as for the presence of the foreign military on the territory of Syria, against the wish of the government, I mean the American and the Turkish troops, what is the position of the Syrian government towards the presence of the Turkish military? Are there any changes in the position of Turkey that you can feel during, could feel during this round of negotiations? Thank you for the question. I recently talked about our position towards the Turkish and American presence, We consider it to be an act of aggression, and we demand these troops to leave the territory of Syria. This is our principled position. As you know, our delegation does not maintain any dialogue with the Turkish party for the reasons that are known to everyone, that we have explained at length and in detail, and the reason being that the Turkish party supports terrorists present on the territory of our country. And we believe that Turkey opens our borders to terrorists. Therefore, we do not maintain the dialogue with them, but we voice our position very clearly. And this position is known by our guarantors, Iran and Russia. They understand fully our position. And all I can say is that they are understanding is complete and full of our position. Thank you.
A joint statement released after the 2 days of talks in Astana said delegations from Russia, Iran, and Turkey, representatives of Syria's government, as well as a 20-member opposition team, have agreed to hold a peace congress in Russia's Black Sea resort of Sochi next month. The statement said the congress will be held between January 29th and 30th, and all segments of Syrian society will be invited to participate. And we close today's newscast with this commentary from imprisoned journalist Mumia Abu Jamal.
Power of law and sex. A powerful political figure asked several of his female staffers a favor. Either of you gals have my baby, don't worry, I'm willing to pay y'all. In an era in which sexual harassment, assault, and attacks on women seem commonplace, this case sounds like something out of a bad sci-fi movie. Is this real life? One wonders. It reminded me of the feminist futuristic classic The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood, where men of money and means create a conservative theocracy where women of lower social standing are ordered and taught to serve the wealthy classes, even to the point of bearing them children whom they then have no claim whatsoever. That, in fact, was a true and hidden condition of America at its founding, when African women were raped at will, only to give birth to children who could be sold for profit at whim. The politician who propositioned his staff members, Representative Trent Franks, Republican, 8th District, Arizona, was a prominent conservative known for family values. Well, this guy offered his staffers $5 million to sell their wombs. Some values, huh? Oh, he didn't want to use in vitro fertilization. He wanted to do it the old-fashioned way, you know, sex. Even though he's retired, doesn't it give you insight into how lawmakers think about regular people? I think so. The bodies of women are under capitalism's logic. Just another commodity, something to be bought and sold. That logic brought us the horrors and carnage of slavery, where black women were bred and sold like cattle. Over a century later, and the price has risen. Well, I guess that's progress, right? From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu Jamal.
And we thank Noel Hanrahan and PrisonRadio.org for that commentary from imprisoned journalist Mumia Abu Jamal. If you'd like to hear a replay of this newscast or listen to any of our archived newscasts, click on the link to archived newscasts at communitypublicradio.org. Again, that's communitypublicradio.org. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.